UK, Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! On a rainy and somewhat chilly late May day here in Appalachistan, we begin this evening's broadcast for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 25th day of May, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that, of course, is where you go to click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. And hop right into the madcap merriment that is the real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Monday through Friday here. If you do pick out a screen name and a password and jump in, you'll be met by Anatole and Chug a Punch and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky and Steve from Georgistan and V.T. Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. And welcome to the room, Lizardo, just wandering by. Yes, glad to see you. And hope to see you there, too, if you feel so inclined and you can cope with Java and all the little things that kind of go with all of that. We seem to be, knock wood, streaming nicely at both White Rose Society and on headon.live. So let's hope it stays that way. Maybe we just needed some rain here, of course, or maybe we had to hit a sufficient amount of rain here. Yeah. Because we've had plenty of it. So, I'd like to thank our subscriber, Asa, for getting us going earlier in the evening. Thank you very kindly, Asa. And thank you to brand new subscriber for the 25th of the month, Kay. Thank you, Kay, in California. Thank you very, very much. It's nice to have new subscribers. Oh, one of these days we're going to get up there to 400, and then all this fundraising talk, you know, it will be severely curtailed unless we find ourselves deep down in a hole, and we're not. We have $180 in fundraising to go this evening because of Kay and because of Asa. And thank you very kindly for making that happen. That is absolutely wonderful. So 18 at 10, 10 at 18, 1 at 180, 2 at 90, 4 at 45, 8 at 22.50, 16 at 11 and a quarter. Oh, wait, 32 at $5.67 and a half cents. We'll round it up to $5.68 and put that toward Agnes's the tip jar for Agnes's massage therapist. Okay? Yes. So if you prefer the United States, that's all via PayPal. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, it is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And Bossman Wayne won't be going to the mailbox for a few days because he's still laid up and still recuperating from a cholecystectomy and having that nasty little bag of bile removed from troublemaking little piece of removed from his innards. But he's coming along. He's coming along nicely. I talked to him just a little bit ago, and he thanks you all for your kind wishes and your good thoughts. Not a praying man. Wayne isn't. He's kind of like me in that regard, or I'm like him. So, you know, good thoughts, that sort of thing. And sending out our warmest and best and most hopeful thoughts to a dear friend in Wisconsin this evening. He likes to fly under the radar, so I won't name names. But even as we speak, he is in the middle of what is something on the order of about 12 hours of open-heart surgery for the second time since December. So, you know who you are whenever you get around to hearing this, and you know you have our warmest and our best and our kindest thoughts. So, just, you know, keep folks in mind, because this is a little family community congregation, and I'm hoping we will have only the best news sometime later this evening and into tomorrow and in the days going forward. Thank you, Keith, for getting us started this evening. That means we got $170 to go. Thank you very kindly. It is much obliged, and we do so appreciate the help. I'm just checking here to see if there's been an update on our friends. Well-being. Nothing yet, but I'll let you know depending on how it develops. All right, so where do we begin? Do we begin with where everybody else has probably begun today? Or has by this hour, has the Greg Gianforte story been subsumed beneath the tsunami of embarrassment and freakishness and trouble and Sturm und Drang created by Comrade Kumquat in Europe today? Fascinating, isn't it? He goes to Saudi Arabia and behaves himself, and he's all slow talking and no tweeting and bowing and scraping and curtsying. Then he goes to Israel. It becomes a little less so. And he talks about having just arrived in Israel from the Middle East. Gets punked in Israel by his own wife, gets punked by her again in Rome, gets punked by the Pope in Rome, and then lands in Brussels. And the wheels go straight from wobbling to all the way off the apple cart. Article 5 of the NATO treaty. And, you know, we'd all like to live in a world where there were no threats and peace was a constant. And there were never any nasty people who were willing to slaughter children to achieve sketchy political ends. But we don't live in that world. And there are real threats out there. And sometimes, and I think we just, being realists here, we have to acknowledge sometimes the threat is, well, to quote that great sage and philosopher of the funny pages of years gone by, Pogo, we have seen the enemy, and he is us. Sometimes we're the problem. Worldwide polling all the way through the Dim Leader administration, and probably now again in the Tangerine Tiberius regime, identified the United States of America as the greatest threat to peace in the world. But, and so that's, you know, we're just looking at the big picture. But there is more than us to the big picture. And Article 5 of the NATO Treaty adopts the old notion that a harm to one is a harm to all, as far as signatories to the treaty are concerned. It has been Article 5 has been invoked exactly once in the aftermath of September 11th, 2001, when all of our NATO allies said, hey, the United States was attacked, we stand with the United States. And that having been done, and blood having been shed, yesterday the Trump regime told the New York Times that in his speech at NATO today, Marcus Aurelius, Commodore Cantaloupe, would reaffirm the U.S. commitment to Article 5 of the NATO treaty. And then he didn't. No, not at all. Not even. And that's a problem. And a significant one. Because, you see, Europe is already kind of on edge over the fact that that he's president at all. And so instead of doing what he said he would do, Trump chose today to hector the member nations of NATO instead of trying to create a sense of unity. In just days after what is being described as a terrorist attack in Manchester, England, Donald Trump couldn't be bothered to even mention a reaffirmation of our commitment to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Yeah. and it is having ripples and repercussions throughout the foreign policy community. A man named Tom Wright, a foreign policy scholar with the Brookings Institute, described the speech as and the trip as a failure. Referring to the refusal to affirm Article 5, Tom Wright said on Twitter, "The fact that he did not affirm it is astonishing and shows that someone in the White House or Trump himself took it out. This will come as a huge shock to NATO members." He then went on to say that the trip is close to a disaster. It is a failure. And then along the way added that, and this is a quote from Tom Wright's Twitter, "Putin will be thrilled at Trump's refusal to endorse Article 5, unimaginable under any other president." Now, see, we have to understand, Tom Wright is just a neoliberal shill. Because Vlad Putipoot wouldn't be happy about something like that. Vlad Putipoot is just minding his business over in his own country. He's not murdering he's not murdering journalists or having them killed. He's not overseeing the tormenting and the torture of the LGBTQ community in Russia, and client states. He's just snuggly and cuddly and lovable. And Russia would never take pleasure in seeing fractures emerge in a treaty organization whose purpose has always been to check any potential Russian aggression against the member nations. Among other things, it was like a Festivus speech for Trump, because there was an airing of grievances, and he hectored NATO member states over what they spend on NATO membership and defense. The stupid bastard seems to think it's a country club that has dues. "I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to eat in the men's grill for a while until you pay up there." Right. Mrs. Greenspan over at MSNBC described it as a speech that was painful to watch. Kelly O'Donnell said, "When we were in Saudi Arabia, the president was very clear in saying that America's the lecture of the world. And yet here in this setting, President Trump really scolded member nations that have not paid the proportion that they've agreed to." And at least until such time as nature does what nature does with all of us, or he is removed from office under Article 25 or by impeachment or resigns, we're going to have to put up with this kind of embarrassment. And we're going to have to put up with the dangers to which it exposes both our nations and the nations that are supposed to be our friends. Imagine. He hectored NATO, but on the phone with a despot, the president of the Philippines, he he praised him for the murder incorporated approach that he uses to the drug problem in that country, and then told him, "Oh, and we've definitely got the best submarines. We've got tremendous, unbelievable submarines, and they're patrolling off of North Korea, definitely." Shit. And on top of it all, holy cow, he's now getting punked. Everybody's getting in on the act. He's getting punked by North Korea. I wish I was kidding. Sandra sent me a note earlier today. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't true. This goes to the Gianforte thing. The DPRK news service tweeted, "Elections for U.S. Parliament take place in Montana province, known for its rustic beauty and tradition of savagely attacking news reporters." That's where we are now. We've got governance by a nasty little cabal of right-wing authoritarian autocratic despotic freaks. And North Korea is making jokes about us. And big bad Vladdy Daddy is just waiting for the right moment when NATO shatters into a million pieces. They likely had a hand in the Brexit vote. They certainly had a hand in influencing and disinformation in the United States presidential election. And imagine a Europe that can't pull together. Imagine a Europe that can't pull together to resist or check Russian aggressions against its neighbors, who are now probably more nervous than they have ever been. And then he went after the Germans. You know why I went after the Germans? Because Barack Obama, before Angela Merkel, flew off to Brussels, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from Berlin. There's sort of a historical precedent that proves that. Before she flew off to Brussels, she had a meeting today, and there was a ceremony, and there were Berliners who joyfully greeted Barack Obama at a ceremony at the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin. No doubt this got back to President Dipshit. Tiny Hands J. Dipshit, who decided that he would go after Germany, saying, "Germany's evil. Germany's very evil." Really? Because he was, Germany runs a trade surplus with us. "Germany's definitely very evil. I'll put a 35% import tax on their BMWs if BMW wants to make cars in Mexico." You know, I'd be a little careful there, Marcus Aurelius, because you got some folks at car plants in, say, South Carolina, BMW, Chattanooga, Volkswagen, Talabama, Mercedes-Benz, And you know what they could do? You start a trade war with Germany, they can shutter those shops, and there'll be thousands and thousands of Trumpanzees who don't have jobs making BMWs and Mercedes-Benzes and Volkswagens for, you know, less than their German counterparts make them for in Germany, because they don't have to follow German laws here in the United States. They can just go to a right-to-work state and pay substandard wages to people that don't have the common good goddamn sense to join a union. And who are almost, nearly guarantee you, a majority Trumpanzees. Yeah, so do that. Keep that up, Donnie. Because, see, that's a pretty large, healthy economy there in Germany, and they can push back. But I have no doubt that the warm, warm welcome that Barack Obama received in Germany today had a little something to do with the nasty, shitty things that he said. Der Spiegel reported it. Talking about the trade surplus, Trump said, "You Germans are evil, very evil. Look at the millions of cars they sell in the U.S., and we'll stop that." EU Commissioner Jean-Claude Juncker said, "Free trade is good for all." I would say to BMW, if they want to build a factory in Mexico and sell cars to the U.S. without a 35% tax, they can forget that. Dumbass. And then, yes, there's the Greg Gianforte story. And before we jump down that rabbit hole, and the responses to it are more the story than, I mean, you already know the story. Let me thank Steve and Kara Twiggy for putting to $130 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed. So, yeah, Greg Forte. By this morning, a had been filed against Greg Gianforte, the Republican, the lone House of Representatives seat in Montana. A state with rustic beauty and a historic tradition. And let's see, two, three, four differs in Montana that had previously endorsed this freak. Endorsements, but still the margin of the polling data, which is a little bit dodgy, can be a little bit dodgy, says that Gianforte is anywhere between 14 and 6 points up, anywhere between 6 to 14 points. It's really kind of hard to pinpoint. And we'll just see, we'll see what happens this evening. I guess it'll be a little while before, we've got anything resembling results. Thank you very kindly, Charlene. Charlene just jumped in and met Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus and Twiggy's challenge. Thank you very much. And just had a note from Steve in New York who put a $15 challenge on the table to help take down tonight's fundraising to zero. Thank you, Steve, and thank you. Thank you, Charlene. Jay Cruisin with a note. Hi, Jay Cruisin. Subject line, BMW. Know what my dad said about BMW when they opened that factory in Greenville, South Carolina? Now BMW stands for Bubba Makes Wheels. Yep, they're all Trump supporters. Yeah, there might be one or two. But none of them have shown the gumption to want to have a good middle-class living by joining a union. Yeah. Because those are actually some of the best wages that are available to be had in a place like South Carolina. Even though they are substandard. That says a lot about working down behind the corn pone curtain. Yeah. The Missoulian newspaper wrote an editorial this morning saying the Republican candidate for Congress not only lost the endorsement of this newspaper Wednesday night when, according to witnesses, he put his hands around the throat of a reporter asking him about his health care stance, threw him to the ground and punched him. He should lose the confidence of all Montanans. And that would be great if he did. But we sort of got to be cognizant of the country in which we live, don't we? Trumpanzees have been going wild, hog-a-wild, since last night, hooting and hollering and flinging poo, because they're Trumpanzees. About the violence that he displayed last night. It's pretty disgusting. But then again, they're Trumpanzees. Anybody surprised? Not I, said the little red hen. Republicans in Congress have leapt to his defense. Now, again, in a manifestation of a blessing from the goddess of irony, the witnesses to the attack, and it was an attack, okay? We misuse the word assault within its original Mary Oldie Engelond common law meaning. It was an attack. And the Fox reporter and crew went so far. When we had the story late last night, courtesy of Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, Mike, for kicking in last night. It was described as a body slam. The Fox reporter and crew, however, said he wrapped his hands around the throat of Ben Jacobs, the Guardian reporter. And why did he have such animus toward Ben Jacobs? Well, it turns out that in the last month or so, Ben Jacobs had reported, because being a reporter, he does that, based upon some investigations he had performed, that Greg Gianforte's investment portfolio, because he's a gumpty majillionaire, is chock-a-block with sleazy Russian investments. Ah! Yeah. Exactly. So, presumably, Greg Gianforte knew that and didn't like it. So, let's check in with Teabagger and White Wing Freak from Arizona Stan, Trent Franks. And a few others, courtesy of MSNBC.
Special election, Chris.
All right, Garrett, thank you so much for that. Meantime, Mike Vaccara is on Capitol Hill where he's been talking to members. What are they telling you, Vic?
Chris, it's interesting. We're down here in the catacombs of the U.S. Capitol, deep under the House floor. You can see behind me, members are streaming out of a closed-door meeting. What was it about? It was about the budget. What are we asking about? We're asking about the incident in Montana. A lot of these Republican members don't want to talk about it. Those that did talk about it don't condone the violence, but express some measure of sympathy for Mr. Gianforte because of what they term the liberal media.
You know.
Yeah, the liberal media did it. He ran his throat into Greg Gianforte's hands. I'm surprised they're not asking how Ben Jacobs was dressed. Or, well, because essentially they're saying he was asking for it. Here is Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
We didn't have a course on body slamming when I went to school. I missed that course. I'm sorry I missed it.
I don't care who you are. That's funny. I missed the course in body slamming down there in Texas. Remember, this guy was on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, and he finds criminal assault to be something worth joking about as long as it's being done to a liberal. Right? Yeah. Trent Franks.
The left has precipitated this tense, confrontational approach throughout the country in recent months.
The left has precipitated it. And Ben Jacobs is, of course, a member of the left. I mean, I'm sure he's got his membership card in his pocket somewhere. And how did he precipitate it? By asking Greg Gianforte a question. Man, that's some precipitation, isn't it? By asking him a question. So, in Republican world, if you ask someone a question, in Republican land, if someone asks you a question, you have a right to try to kill them. Because, see, when you wrap your hands around somebody's throat, that's a manifestation not of an intent to get someone away from you, but of an intent to do serious bodily harm. Gianforte is presently charged with a misdemeanor. Arguably, a grand jury hearing this case might choose to see that as felonious conduct. If, of course, there in Bozeman, there's a prosecutor with that much spine. I give some credit to the sheriff of the county because he did get around to charging Gianforte with assault, even though he was last month or month and a half ago a $250 donor to Gianforte's campaign. Yes. And David in South Carolina, Stan, I know. Subject line, aggressive liberals. Where are all these aggressive liberals the GOP speaks of? Just wondering. I know. I think they're kind of like leprechauns. I mean, we had a rainbow here last week, and at the end of my rainbow, all I had was a rusted out smoker. No leprechaun, no pot of gold. Fuck, it's West Virginia. I'm lucky there wasn't a pot of coal. But I have a feeling that the aggressive liberals are, you know, wherever the leprechauns are and the unicorns. But Trent Franks wasn't done. No.
I reject any kind of thing where we use physical violence in a situation like that. It should not have happened, and the law will have to be the ultimate arbiter.
I believe that we should all treat the press with respect, and I try to lead by example. I, of course, hope that the Republican is successful today because I think that his views are the views of the people of Montana.
I deplore violence, but if the guy who did the violence, well, I want him to win because the people of Montana share his violent views. Huh? Aren't they a lovely bunch?
Lovely.
And so that's just a few of the political genii. There's more genius to be had. Bless his heart, Squint, who helped as much or more than any other member of the for-profit media to help get Donald Trump elected. He now says that it is, and he's right, that it is the atmosphere that Trump created that led to what happened last night. And by the way, have we all forgotten a little incident perpetrated by Paul Manafort, friend O'Pootie-Poot? Have we forgotten that one where he assaulted a reporter, where he laid hands upon a reporter, then claimed he didn't, and then turned around and bragged about getting away with it? Have we forgotten that one? No, I didn't think you had, because I hadn't either. And every last one of them. Christians. Of course. Then, in an article over at Salon, they noted we didn't have a course in body slamming as well. The Republicans had a wonderful time enjoying the attack on a journalist. Laura Ingraham was particularly piquant.
Did anyone get his lunch money stolen today and then run to tell the recess monitor?
Because that's what it was like. It was like Paul Gianforte stole money from Ben Jacobs. It wasn't like he wrapped his hands around his throat or anything, or was at least momentarily transported by the idea of strangling the life out of him. You know, for asking him a question about the health care bill that we now know, thanks to the CBO, will start out by knocking 23 million people out of their health care, forcing seniors to pay ungodly amounts for coverage, restore pre-existing condition limitations, et cetera, ad infinitum, ad nauseam. Yeah. And then... Well, prior to that, Laura Ingraham had tweeted, "Politicians always need to keep their cool. But what would most Montana men do if body slammed for no reason by another man?" You see, Ben Jacobs is not, as far as Laura Ingraham is concerned, sufficiently butch. Because if you ask the NRA, of course, the answer at the NRA... Hey, look, if Ben Jacobs had had a gun, according to the NRA, it would have been okay if he had blown Greg Gianforte's fucking head off. I'm not saying it's okay, but that's exactly the kind of situation that Wayne LaPierre is talking about when he says... It's a dangerous world we live in. It's dangerous out there. The only way to stop a bad guy is a good guy with a gun. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Greg Gianforte is white.
But what would most Montana men do if body slammed for no reason by another man?
They'd get a gun! And you know what? If if Rob Quist had done that to Ben Jacobs, or let's say if Rob Quist had done that to, oh, I don't know, Milo Yiannopoulos, every Republican, every Trumpanzee in America would be screaming, "Get a rope!" Then there's Representative Roger Williams of course, Texas. Look, it. When you run for office, there's a lot of tension. It's kind of game time, you know? I'm not saying we need to take down our opponents or our friends, but I don't know what really happened. If he wins, he will have won the election fair and square. People are going to vote, so if they elect him, certainly he'll be welcomed. Unfortunately, it's kind of a sign of the times with people running for office and the press. It's not my style. There's a lot of adversary between mainstream media and politicians. It's not an excuse. I'm just saying it creates sometimes unneeded energy. There's a man with a lot of moral clarity representing Roger Williams of Texas, Republican. And then, and my friends in Wisconsin will utter a collective, "Ew!" There's Glenn Grothman. Speaking of how he and his Republican colleagues will respond to Greg Gianforte if he wins the election, I think he'd be very welcome here. Seems like a good guy. There's convincing evidence he committed a crime. Should there be consequences? That was the question. We need somebody who's going to come up here and help drain the swamp. And if you're for draining the swamp, you're on our team. And if you're somebody who thinks government isn't big enough and wants open borders, you're part of the destruction of America. So, never mind the fact that if he wins the election, he will win with an assault charge hanging over his head. And by the way, just me, I hope to goodness that some lily-livered executive at The Guardian doesn't decide, "Well, you know, we need to let bygones be bygones. We're a liberal paper, after all. Why should we stand up for ourselves? We don't take our own side in a fight." Folks, you pay the travel charges. You make sure that that charge sticks. Hire the best, meanest plaintiff's lawyer you can find to sue Greg Gianforte along the way. At some point in time, if there hasn't already been, there'll be a, "I deeply regret my actions. I let my emotions get the better of me, but under a situation of extreme provocation." Being asked, really? You're going to run for office, and you don't even have enough ass on you to be able to answer a reporter's question that you've already been putting off for weeks. Because the question that started all of this is, what is your position on the Republican American Health Care Act? What is your position on throwing 23 million Americans out of their health care coverage? And for that, Ben Jacobs got a pair of hands wrapped around his throat in an effort to strangle him, arguably, unto death. This shouldn't be an assault charge. It should be a damned attempted murder charge. Granted, second degree, heat of passion. Although if he was motivated by what Ben Jacobs had uncovered about his investment portfolio, a good prosecutor might actually be able to run that one right up to first degree, you know, premeditation. I know, Asa. Asa says, I think your theory about assholes will come true, Bob. Gianforte will win bigly. I wish I didn't agree with you. I wish I could say, no, the people of Montana are too good for that. But it's Montana. Hell, half of them probably manage their herds by going out and punching cattle in the face like Mongo from fucking Blazing Saddles. Mongo just pawn in Big Game of Life. I don't know. I don't even know if the recently dubbed horn resident optimist Scott in San Diego would be able to make a credible argument that we're that good, or the people of Montana are that good. Hi, Hoghead. Hoghead said, hi, Bob, in the chat room. And then there's the question of if he wins, should he be seated? Because, and there's not a blessed thing the Supreme Court or a U.S. District Court in the Southern District of Florida with a lawyer on a contingent fee agreement. No. The House of Representatives can decide whom it will seat and if it will seat, according to its own rules. And if Paul Ryan, and if the Republican majority had any morals, any ethics, but why do we bother to even persist in that line of inquiry? But do let's. If they had any morals, they would refuse to seat Greg Gianforte if he wins. A miracle would be nice. Be very nice indeed. Oh, yeah. So we've got that to deal with this evening. Yeah, Steve from Georgistan says, if the situation was reversed, Nancy Pelosi would be shamed into not seating the thug. And in point of fact, Paul Ryan would probably refuse to seat Rob Quist had he punched, say, Milo Yiannopoulos or attempted to strangle him to death. Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks, Angry. Angry just shared a story with me. I don't know if it's a real story. The Daily Dot. The internet has rallied to replace Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs' glasses after alleged attack. Because there's no video, but because the Fox reporters described it for us, I'm trying to understand how grabbing somebody by the throat constitutes a body slam. Doing a little paraphrasing global search and replace work, Steve in New York says, imagine this article. Audio of Barack Obama attacking Ben Jacobs corroborated by Fox News journalists in the room who described candidates slamming him to the ground. Ben Jacobs, a Guardian political reporter, was asking Barack Obama about the Republican health care plan when the candidate allegedly body slammed the reporter. Oh, there'd be candlelight Klan rallies all over the country. Ron and Raleigh, what if the reporter had exercised his right to self-defense and had beaten John Forte to within an inch of his misbegotten life? Would these assholes be so solicitous of his feelings? Well, no, they'd want him imprisoned for him. He hit back against a political candidate. You can't do that against a Republican political candidate. Oh, then, no, if he'd swung back at him, Greg Gianforte would have pulled a gun and shot him. And then sworn that he was scared to death of Ben Jacobs. See how it works? It would have been something right out of Shane. I thought he had a gun. You all thought he had a gun, didn't you? You saw he looked like he had a gun and glasses and an iPhone. Of all the people in the world to make throw shade at Greg Gianforte, it was a shock to see cranky old Orrin Hatch of Utah put out a photo of reporters holding microphones and phones up to his face to get the audio. And he said, here I am being assaulted with microphones. And, of course, Orrin Hatch wasn't trying to strangle anybody. Clarity asking the question, what if this reporter was from the Detroit Free Press and was a person of color? That person would have been arrested. Are you kidding? Arrested? That person would have been killed. Journalizing while black. No doubt about it. So here we are at the top of the hour and the close of the filibobster. Note coming from Marty. Speaking of the meanest lawyer you can find, what's Mike Papantonio up to? Don't know. That wasn't who I had in mind, but maybe Jerry Spence is out of the business now. Plaintiff's law. Subject line, Montana. Bob, on the bright side, the population density is only 7 of these ignorant bastards per square mile. Regards, Steve in China. Yeah, and it's always Montana and Wyoming that we point to when we discuss the inequities of the American political system, particularly the United States. But I hope you did your jobs today and you get Rob Quist in there because, the Republicans will shit. And it might even send them a message to behave yourself a little bit. Eric and P.A., this is how you deal with the enemy of the people. Gianforte now has a second career as a Republican self-defense. Right. Remember, Donald Trump described the media, of which I guess arguably I'm an infinitesimal part, as the enemy of the people of the United States. Hi. So we're making real progress. We're making real progress. Got a $15 challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve in New York. And we're making our way down toward wiping out the fundraising goal for this evening. So hopefully, crossing fingers, we'll get that done in fairly short order. It being a Thursday, we have the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So, yeah, we'll take a break and come back. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Are you feeling the briars and the brambles yet? I am. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. Wrong song. Wrong song. Damn it. Hold on. There. Right song. Back.
Thursday, May 25, 2017.
That budget that Trump has presented is a grotesquely immoral budget.
Trump's proposed budget cuts deeply into the environment. Mudslide buries California's iconic Pacific Coast Highway. Wind farm company proposes to retrain coal miners to be wind technicians for free. Plus,
the Pope skips three of his encyclicals, one including his views on climate change.
Pope Francis offers a gift and a message to President Trump.
All of those gifts, all of those messages straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The National Science Foundation last year used your taxpayer money to fund a climate change musical. Do you think that's a waste of your money?
No. I love musicals. This is your Green News Report.
And people need to learn about climate change.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, you have been digging into Donald Trump's proposed budget. We've been speaking about how terrible it would be for the environment, but you have found it is even worse than that.
Yes, more details are emerging. It cuts everything non-military deeply to finance increased defense spending and a massive tax cut for the wealthiest Americans. In addition to the 30% cut to the budget of the Environmental Protection Agency, the Trump administration proposes pushing more environmental responsibilities onto the states, but then also cuts grants to the states by nearly half for everything from upgrading water infrastructure to toxic waste cleanup. The Great Lakes Protection Fund, which cleans up the drinking water supply for more than 20 million people, would be completely eliminated. That would leave the task solely to states like Ohio, which is already struggling with chronic toxic algae blooms in Lake Erie that have shut down water intakes for the city of Toledo's water supply. The National Park Service, which generates billions in tourism dollars in the states, would be cut by more than 80%. And despite Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt's recent promises to refocus the EPA's mission on Superfund site cleanups, Trump cuts the Superfund program by 25%.
Because, of course, he does. But that's just what you say. Scott Pruitt, head of the EPA, said this on Fox News.
The past administration talked a lot. This administration's actually taking steps to do things to clean up the environment.
That was before the budget proposal came out.
Oh, so he was lying to Fox News.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll be very upset about it.
The Washington Post reports the Trump administration is also drafting plans to sell off and privatize public assets like bridges, airports, and even highway rest stops, and encourage the states to do so as well, and also accelerate the environmental permitting process for new infrastructure like pipelines.
Well, those highway rest stops are just there to keep people safe on the road so they have a place to rest. They're not making anybody any money. That needs to be fixed, Desi Doyen.
Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont on MSNBC called the entire budget proposal immoral and pledged to fight it in the Senate.
Environmental programs will be decimated in this country. It is an outrageous budget. It is a budget that the American people do not want. It's a budget that should not see the light of day in the U.S. Senate.
Speaking of morality, on President Trump's overseas trip, Pope Francis gave Trump a nudge on climate change during his visit to the Vatican on Wednesday. Francis gave Trump a copy of his landmark encyclical on the environment, which calls action on climate change a moral duty. Activists projected an image of the words "Planet Earth First" onto the massive dome of St. Peter's Basilica, and Vatican officials pressed Trump to stay in the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement.
Donald Trump also reportedly promised he would read those books from the Pope. Do you think he will?
Probably not.
Is lying to the Pope any kind of high, amazing sin?
There's probably a joke about something in the woods right about now. Here in the U.S., the Justice Department sued automaker Fiat Chrysler this week, alleging the company installed secret software to cheat U.S. emissions tests, very similar to the Volkswagen emissions cheating scandal last year. Fiat Chrysler could be liable for up to $4.5 billion in fines for fraud and illegal pollution from its Jeep Grand Cherokees and Ram diesel pickup trucks sold since 2014. By the way, the vehicle testing lab that caught Volkswagen and Fiat Chrysler is also slated for a massive budget cut. In California, a massive landslide has buried a section of California's iconic Highway 1 in Big Sur under a 40-foot layer of rock and dirt, likely the largest landslide in the state's history. Extreme rains have caused more than $1 billion in damage to California's highways in more than 400 locations, thanks to El Niño's extreme weather. Finally, a wind farm company has announced a free training program starting next month in Wyoming to retrain local former coal miners as wind turbine technicians to meet the needs for its newest wind farm. The kicker? It's a Chinese manufacturer. In other words, a Chinese company is tapping unemployed energy workers in Wyoming, showing that they can and should be retrained for new energy jobs.
And there's your leadership. Thank you, China. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ten minutes past the hour. Thorn in the Side Thursday for the 25th day of May, 2017. And over on the Skype line is Jim. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How you doing?
Pretty good. You sound pretty chipper.
Well, why not? Must be. All I can say is, as far as the restaurants are concerned, spare if you must this old gray head, but leave our restaurants alone.
What?
Or as in gay parlance, there's no Ruth Ann's.
Well, I will let your expertise stand upon its own merit.
Very good, very good, very good. So, how are you and your audience doing this evening?
Well,
Rufus and I have been sort of parked back here and watching TV.
Well, it's quite understandable. Beyond my dirty little habit between the hours of 6 and 9 a.m., I don't watch a lot of television.
Well,
I prefer to watch things that I catch up with series that started 4 years ago and then just binge watched them.
Oh, there you go.
There's some that I'm, because it's so frustrating. I got started on Westworld, and now I think the next season of Westworld might come out sometime in 2029 or something. It's frustrating.
My goodness. Well, just as long as you're not flipping over the Kardashians or anything like that. Not that I would talk for a second.
No, the only Kardashians I worry about are the ones in outer space on Star Trek. And I think they're probably nicer people, Jim.
They probably are. And, well, what can one say? What do you think about Trump's little visit to Brussels today? He was just his usual charming self, wasn't he?
It'll be a miracle if he makes it back to the United States and we've still got any allies left at all.
I mean, when he was coming through to get in front, he knocked over the...
Yeah, I didn't get to that. That was a lovely little... This has been a...
He knocked the guy out of the way, like, you know, he...
Yeah, he just
like,
elbowed him aside like he was trying to get on the subway.
Yeah, he did. I mean, you know, I thought to myself, good Lord, and the Europeans were looking at him like, who is this buffoon? Who was she? Who is she? Who does she hope to?
There's got to be some appropriate word in French that follows the word quel to describe you. Quel asshole! Quel jerk!
Yeah. Quel merde!
Was ein Dickkopf, you know, I mean.
Absolutely. I mean, those people must be thinking, I guess they're en route back to the country, aren't they?
It's a 9-day trip. He has to go. It gets worse before it gets better, Jim, because he still has to go to Sicily for the G7 meeting.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'm sure he will show his ass there, too, just knowing him, unless people who surround him don't compliment and flatter him. He just gets real defensive and say, you know, I'm going to take my little ball and go home. And I know this may sound tacky, but, you know, we used to talk about some other people's hair. His hair, my God, I'm going to call him the corn silk queen.
Jesus, that rug. Yeah.
That stuff doesn't even look like hair. I mean, it looks like some woman who may be in her 70s who's trying to get
well,
white.
Hold on, Jim. I mean, you and I have never been known for our classiness. We can be kind of catty and bitchy when we want to be.
Meow.
Have you ever looked up a picture of Donald Trump's mother, Mary, in her later years?
No, I never thought about that.
That's your homework, Jim.
Oh, no, I don't think I could handle it.
No. There. You cannot shirk from this duty. This cup will not pass from you. Just look up Mary Trump and scroll through until you find the one of her in her old age in which she looks like a character from a David Lynch film.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he gets it on us, right?
That's where he got the little cat's ass mouth from.
Oh, yeah. And the one that Alec Baldwin does so well on SNL. I mean, he just purses his lips. I mean, I thought to myself, what are you trying to tell us, Mr. Trump? Ms. Trump or whatever?
But, you know, the shame of it all is he's running all over those places that are just chock-a-block in history and, you know, lessons to learn.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, you know, he was in Rome. If he wanted to, he could have maybe taken a little walk from the Forum up the Via Sacra and over to the Torre Argentina, Largo, mm-hmm. Argentina.
Yeah.
And somebody could have told him what happened there a couple of millennia back.
Hell, I wish he'd gone to the Tarpeian Rock and thrown himself off.
If only we could find it. You know, they don't really know where the Tarpeian Rock is.
Really?
Yeah, seriously. It's just like nobody knows where the Rubicon is. For all the talk about... Yeah, because it was kind of a creek. And nobody really, really honest to God knows where the Rubicon was. But the thing is, he's going to Sicily, Jim. And, you know, there's a town in Sicily called Siracusa.
Oh, yeah, the one that Alcibiades hit first, or was it?
Right, the assault by the Athenian Empire on Syracuse,
right,
ultimately was the downfall of the Athenian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was led by Alcibiades, and he, in turn, then went traitor and went over to the Spartans. But it was a brutal thing. And
all those wars were back then. I mean, you know, just, you know, no quarter asked, no quarter given.
And I mean, the horrors of the Athenians were kept. They were imprisoned in a quarry. And they some of them later on said that their sanity was saved by being able to hear at a distance someone reciting, oh God, what, maybe Euripides or Sophocles or one of the great tragedians.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lesson there for great powers, because it hadn't been that long before Syracuse, when the Athenians looked at in the Melian dialogue, looked at the Melians and said, great powers do what they want, and small countries do what they must.
Well, that's true. Absolutely.
And he might want to think twice before he decides to go bully boy against some small and helpless nation.
You know, I just don't think that is his nature. I really don't think so. I mean, if anything, when he sees something small and helpless or less than he immediately has this type of pit bull instinct to go after it. I really think that's just part of his thick state. That's the way he's been all his life, Bob, God Almighty. And, you know, how that fruit could be president, I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, with his history of the people he screwed on his way to the top, and I don't want to repeat myself, you know his financial history. Everybody in New York knows his financial history. I'm surprised he can't even go down Fifth Avenue instead of shooting somebody. Well, that means shot himself, because he's really hurt a lot of people. And he's trying to expand that.
Well, I think in the long run, in many ways along the way, he's probably been protected by the mob, Jim.
Well, you know, they will do that only to a certain extent. Well, I mean, I think he's mobbed up by not only the local mob here, but, of course, the worst mob of all, and that's the Russian mob. Now, those people just don't know when to quit.
Well, in our discussion, I mentioned to you that Dutch documentary, The Dubious Friends of Donald Trump. That'll make the little hair stand up on the back of your neck.
I'm sure it would. And, you know, he's, and let's see, now his son-in-law has been an object of investigation by the FBI.
Oh, yeah, and the article about his slumlord status, like in Maryland.
Who, his
Jared Kushner's. It is disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sure
it's
stomach-turning. Yeah, I've heard about that. Well, you know, to look at the guy, he's a nice-looking, clean-cut little fella and stuff like that. But, you know, there's something about him, and I don't know what it is, that makes my gaydar go boom, 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 boom.
Really?
Yeah, and I think just intuitively that he has made more than his fair share of trips from the ATM boy bank. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Wait. Time out. Hold on. His fair share of trips to the ATM boy bank. You get a cowbell for that, Jim.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Just like Dan Quayle did. I know that for a fact. That was back in my day.
And really?
I mean, well, you took one look at the woman he was married to, that Marilyn, my God, those teeth. Oh, Lord, they scared me.
Mouthful of teeth, had she?
Oh, Lord, yeah. I mean, she could just take her coaxial cable and bite it in, too. But, you know.
Well, I'm cringing and crossing my legs. Thank you.
Well, whatever. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, I just get that feeling. And his son-in-law probably hooked up with Donald Trump's daughter to enhance his own, you know, position financially or whatever. And apparently he's taking a lot of good lessons from the master as far as the slumlord and being a slumlord in Maryland. I mean, that's just too much. You ever been to Baltimore?
Ever so briefly.
You ever been to the lower side of Baltimore when it's not you? We're not talking about the Inner Harbor or whatever thing like
no,
that.
No, I haven't.
The place where John Waters lived and made his films and stuff like that.
No.
Oh, Lord, that's the place to see. You wouldn't believe it. I mean, like I say, John Waters was inspired by all that stuff. That's one of the reasons he stayed in Baltimore because, you know, Baltimore is an extremely interesting city in more ways than one. And that thought just popped into my head when you were talking about him being a slumlord in Maryland. Tell me, how many cities is this guy infected with his unfairness?
Well, the story that I read was focused mainly on the fact that his company buys up semi-distressed apartment complexes, gets hooked up with, you know what Section 8 is?
Mm-hmm.
And then basically grifts on it. And when somebody, just horror stories of how filthy and unsanitary and nasty. And then they turn around when people get so disgusted they have to move out. And they sue them through a particular sleazebag lawyer, and get judgment against these people, and follow them all through their roads and days, trying to collect on the judgments.
Yeah, HUD horror stories. That's exactly what they are. Yeah, I've heard about that too. And you know how he is able to subvert. I'll have to ask that question. Well, look at who he got. You know, look at who his father-in-law is. I mean, he did the same thing in New York. Oh my God! So many people he dispossessed, people who lived in neighborhoods for years, and he'd buy up all these properties and he would revitalize them, quote, or urbanize them, or what's the word when you want to get into the yuppie situation? There's a term for it. I can't remember it now. But Trump made a lot of his money that way. His old man did too. I mean, they didn't give a shit who they dispossessed. I mean, they took old established.
No, and his old man was a member of the Klan, too, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. He could care less. Yeah, that didn't surprise me at all. And this guy with his trailing dishonesty, and, you know, I just don't understand it. He still hasn't revealed, to my knowledge, his tax returns or anything like that. I just don't see how he can get away with stuff like this. I mean, I'm just being very naive when I say that because I guess he's president. If he can turn something that's classified as non-classified, he can change wine into water as well as change his own tax return to suit his purpose. Hell, not even Richard Nixon did that.
But the thing is, what we're learning is we are so far past Nixon. Hell, we're past Reagan. We're past dim leader, Jim. We are in a whole new world of sleaze and grift and graft and corruption, and a level of mendacity that really would make Richard Nixon blush. I mean, Trump looked right at brand new French President Macron today, Emmanuel Macron, and he said, "Oh yeah, you were definitely my guy in that election. You were my guy." When he openly voiced support for that nasty little Nazi Le Pen.
I know. And you could see those people, you know, you could see him on TV and the reaction those people had in being in his august presence. I mean, they were just like, what is he going to say next? What will he do next? Let me get away from this fruit, this idiot. I think CNN should change their thing for breaking news to what will he do next? Bill Maher had said that, and I thought that was a pretty good line, really. I mean, you know, what will he do next? I mean, it's just like some type of, real bad reality show with him. Orson Honey Boo Boo Child.
Oh, Jesus. And that's pretty bad. But
that's pretty
wait
bad.
Wait till he gets home. Wait till he gets home. Because... You know, they released this budget while he was gone.
Oh, that's a horror show, isn't it?
And it is quite possibly the single most immoral, unethical, bankrupt document ever released in the United States.
And the way they try to defend it, it is just incredible to me how they think that people who have just a modicum of just common sense cannot understand why this is the worst thing in the world that anybody could present to the American people for their consumption or having it rammed down their throats if they had their way. It is just crazy. I mean, that budget of his, well, I hope that it is definitely DOA. And yet, even say, you know, what's the thing about when they tried the first budget, they were all gathered around in front of the White House, and, you know, they needed a bunch of, I don't know, clad robes or whatever you want to call it, and burning a cross because they were celebrating they got this budget through the House, not knowing fully well it would never pass the Senate. And it makes them all look like a bunch of assholes.
Well, that doesn't take a lot of work.
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, you know, give them the time. You know, I look at it this way, okay? Right now, it's a question of patience. He wins, who waits? And, you know, in the first place, that idiot, the worst thing he ever did was piss off the Senate Minority Leader. And that's something you just don't do. But he did that, and he's got Schumer constantly, day by day, and Bernie on his ass. And, you know, eventually their message is going to get through. And that budget that they're trying to present is the most unfair thing I have ever heard of in my life. And I think this one got through the House, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the health care bill, yeah. It's That's highly unlikely this budget will get through the House.
Yeah, well, I mean, the health care bill, it's going to be tied to the budget.
But the thing to remember is that this really isn't anything new. This budget is just welfare queen 8.0. It's the same thing that they've been babbling and blaring and brooding and braying about since the days of Ronald Reagan. There's too many layabouts. There's too many poors. There's too many people who claim to be disabled, but aren't actually. And every time one of these assholes says that, Jim, you know that they have no understanding of disability whatsoever.
Mm-mm, not at all. Not at all.
Because, I mean, you know, you might be able, you know, let's say you've got a house with a little yard around it and you're disabled. Be able to go out once a week and push a lawnmower around your yard to keep the weeds from...
Oh, yeah, surely. Excuse me.
That does not mean you can stand on your feet for 8 hours a damn day and work a job, or even sit for 8 hours a day.
Or if you've got one arm, you could swing either a bush axe or a swing lathe or whatever. You know, I mean, these people have no compunction, no compassion.
Cross next to Jesus Christ, claiming their Christianity.
I'm sure that's going to be a real knee slapper when they do that before. And, you know, it can look one way, and they might see the error of what they've done, but then they're going to have to look the other way and see the fear of what they will do or try to do. And I really think that Donald Trump, in his own way, is that this country has ever had to make exactly the direction in which it is going.
The sad thing is, every time somebody like Trump comes along, or a dim leader Bush, you know, you might get a period of trying to repair the damage. But the damage is never fully repaired, Jim.
Well, I don't think his damage could ever be repaired, to tell you the truth. I mean, the whole business of him, ever since he began to campaign for the presidency, has just been nothing but a bunch of, it reminds me of a bunch of rowdy people, street brawlers, and him up there encouraging them, kick his ass, get him out, this, that, and the other. And then you had this thing in Montana with this guy who got into this kerfuffle with the Republican of the Guardian, I believe. And now they're trying to do damage report on that. And I don't think they're going to do that. I hope to hell that they do not vote for that son of a bitch. I know you referenced him in your opening statements, but, I mean, you know, he's just... I mean, for example, his version versus the guy who got slammed. And even Fox News, as bad as they are, couldn't help but try to tell the truth. I mean, the guy's opening statement, or his press statement, was that he was attacked, basically, and couldn't do anything else. But even Fox couldn't agree with that, because they had the whole thing on record. You know, it was recorded. And he was just following Trump's manifest. And
yeah, he was working from a script.
Sure he was. And I hope the hell that he doesn't get elected to that 1 year term that he's got. And I hope that they're going to make these people realize that, you know, this may have been good during the election campaign to get a lot of people all head up. And, you know, you thought when I would see Trump on his, every time he would go before one of his audiences, it would be something like a real, real bad reality show. And the stuff what he would do. But yet, you know, the guy got elected to the White House. But now, when they see what he's actually trying to do with the budget and the Health Care Act and stuff like that, I mean, it's absolutely insane. And I don't think that budget of his or that health care of his, the Republicans have,
no, but along but along the way, he can do massive damage. And one of the things that's that might very well happen, that may be happening, is the withholding of the subsidies. And if he does that, that will be a matter of the health insurance market will go boom.
Is that up to basically the House Finance Committee?
That's not entirely the case. He has stated that he wants to cut off billions of dollars.
In the
welfare, you know, it's corporate welfare. The corporate welfare payments to health insurance companies. That participate in the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
And if he does that, everything blows up.
I just don't think he will. I don't think he'll be able to. I think it will get so hot on him.
Well, I mean, look at the degree to which, you know, what he said on the campaign trail means absolutely nothing to him. He said, trust me, I will not touch your Social Security and your Medicare and your Medicaid. Well, that's all this budget does.
Well, I mean,
is he just so disinterested that he looks at the little freaks and creeps that work around him and says, hey, do whatever you want to. I just wanted to go to the bill signings.
Well, number one, that's like somebody else in European history that said he wouldn't do this or he wouldn't do that, and we saw how much he could be trusted. And if he says he won't touch Medicaid, bullshit. I won't touch Social Security or Medicare, bullshit, because he's got, with all that little kitchen cabinet he's got surrounding him, I mean, he doesn't have the sense enough to have real intelligent Washingtonians or real political advisors to say, look, you got to do this, you can't do this. But he surrounded himself with a bunch of idiots and his own family. And, you know, the only thing he likes is to, you know, get up there and grandstand. And as long as you say something nice to him, he will, well, I guess, be reasonably nice to you. And then when he gets the bill signed, I just love the way he signs those bills. You got to hold them up. You can't read the shit. Well, you know what's in them. They could be dirty, dirty jokes for all I know. If somebody's written there for it. I mean, you know, I've just never seen anybody like him in my life. Never. I mean, he's acting like he's like a third world type of dictator, or some of these guys who would go into like Mexico, for example, and have what they call pronunciamientos, and then, you know, they would make these statements, bizarre statements, you know, to get themselves elected or after they were elected, and then turn right around and do exactly the opposite. Now, Trump will not restrict any social program ever, ever, ever. And if he can get his hands on Social Security and Medicare, he'll do the same thing that he said he wasn't going to do to Medicaid, believe you me. What he speaks academically. Whatever he says, you can depend upon the fact that he will do the exact opposite. Now, maybe I'm being axiomatic incorrectly, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I do not.
And, you know, here's the thing. You've got people, he wants to take breakfast for children for the SNAP program and other things like that. He wants to take Medicaid for people who are desperately sick and need them. And yet, what are his interests are? A fucking wall that costs almost $2 billion. It'll probably end up being three by the time the contractors get through with it and the cost overruns, because they milk the government for everything they can, and with no quality assurance on what they're doing and when they're doing, so they just give it to them. And a wall that's just, why? I mean, you know, the guys.
Yeah, but no, you say a wall. Why, Jim? The why is pretty damn easy, because it satisfies the atavistic, terrors and bigotries and xenophobias of his most ardent followers.
Yeah, his base. And they're so stupid, they can't look back at history and see exactly what certain walls have done. I mean, the Antonine Wall didn't do very well. Hadrian's Wall didn't do very well. The Great Wall of China didn't do very well. And you saw all the efforts.
But I do know
made.
A big fence in Chicago who did pretty good.
Really? Okay. How much is he giving you for this?
You get a Rolex. Betty cheap.
Oh, yeah. An electric Rolex too.
Mm-hmm.
I had somebody try to sell me one of those. He said, I got the Rolex for you. There's some guy I worked with at Fort Jackson. Crazy German guy. I liked the guy, but he was just as honest as he could be. As a matter of fact, his name was, I would say Rolitsky, but it was something else. But he was always coming to my office and said, look here, I'm going to tighten you up. Hey, Andy, I've got this Rolex I want to sell you. I said, well, let me see it. And he said, okay, don't say anything to anybody about this. And I look at the watch and I say, everybody called him Ski. And I said, Ski, number one, you got to you should be doing this on government property. Number two, Rolexes are not electric. Number three, they have a registration number on them. And number four, this thing should have been put beneath a roller or one of those big machines that crushes them all when they came into the port for which you got them. And I said, number five, you better not do this anymore because you're going to get your ass fired. Rosinski, that was his name.
There's always one. There's always one.
Yeah, and his history was interesting. He was in the Hitler Youth when he was a boy. Then got over that, joined the American Army, became an American citizen, and came over here. And other than that, you know, he was kind of funny and pretty guy. He used to tell me about stories. Well, his father was in the Gestapo. And he actually had the little metal disc that his old man used to carry around. You know, those little brass discs they had?
Yeah.
And tell me stories that you would not believe about some of the stuff that went on that he saw. And he used to sit there as a kid with a flag waiting for the Fuhrer Sonderzug to come through, you know, Hitler's train, I guess, when he was still riding in it. But I thought to myself, Lord have mercy. I just wonder really how much you have changed. But number one, he would just say, look here, look here. Kind of like those guys you used to say on Saturday Night Live, I'm Hans and you're Franz.
Oh, my God, yeah.
To pop you up. And that's basically the same action he would use. Lord, this conversation has gone all over the board, hasn't it?
Well, that's kind of how it's supposed to work around here, Jim. But
I'm glad to hear it.
Well, you do. You sound in fine form, and I'm glad to hear from you. And
I'll tell you, Bob, after 7 months of being in 4 hospitals and 2 rehab centers and having the stuff, you know, being under, you know, undergoing cancer treatment, it's no fun. I'll be honest with you.
I would dare say it probably really sucks.
It does. But then, you know, you have to, when it rains lemons, you got to try to make lemonade. And that's all you can do. I met some interesting people. I really did.
Oh, I have no doubt.
And I remember I was in Morgantown. And they took me from Morgantown because I had been laid up so long that, you know, my legs needed to have a workout. And so I was there in this place called Mapleshire. But I will say this. I was asleep, and this guy came into my room there, and I woke up, and I just looked at him, and I said, I must be dreaming. And I saw the most handsome young man I have ever
Jim,
seen
Well, it's nice to know that even in the worst of circumstances, you can manage to work up a good incorrigible.
Well, there's nothing incorrigible about that. And I told him that. And I said, look, I said, my friend, I said, you know, the gods have been very good to you, but what they give you, they can take away. And I wish you all the best and the good sense to have a good life and the better sense, a better in which to live it. And he looked at me, he said, thank you. I really appreciate it. Guy was just 22 years old, getting his bachelor's in rehab. And was just as nice to me as he possibly could be. He was just talking to me about all kinds of stuff, and we sort of bonded there, and it was a good experience in a bad time. But at least I regained the use of my legs and the use of my arms. I hadn't been laid up so long. And like I say, there are positive things and outcomes that one can deal with, and it's better to just say, well, I've been away for 7 months. No, I just went away for 7 months. Some things happened that weren't too good, but let's hope that I'll overcome it, and if I don't, well, there it is, and there you have it.
Well, indeed, but we all hope you do, Jim.
Well, I've been wanting to share this with you specifically, but you know that's where I've been, and luckily I've had friends who've looked after Rufus, now his name is Rufus Katinas.
That sounds like a positively T.S. Eliot-ish.
Well, whatever.
Good caddish name.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Bob, the last 7 months have been pure hell. They really have been. God knows. The first thing started off when I went to this hospital here in Beckley, and I had a UTI, and this guy gave me this antibiotic IV, and I went into anaphylactic shock and had a heart attack.
And from
and
the
a white blown lung, yeah. I mean, and you know, I said, you know, well, okay, I can understand him making a mistake like that. But the son of a bitch never even came to say how you do it, whatever. And then because I was in ICU, taken to Charleston. And later on through my trip through all the, my whatever you want to call it, my efforts to get back to Ithaca, met this son of a bitch again in the last hospital in which I was. And he came into my room, and it was some Vietnamese doctor, Dr. Din or whatever. And he saw me, I saw him, and I said, you get your fucking ass out of here before I get out of this bed and kick you all the way down the hall. And boy, he moved. I wasn't angry because of what he had done. That could be an honest mistake. But it almost killed me. But he never had the courtesy to say, I'm by your leave, how are you, if you're okay, boom. So that ought to tell you something about the medical as it exists today. I didn't mean to get off with all that, but you know, an honest.
Well, there's, I'll tell you this much, Jim. There's a flip side to that coin. About a year after my mother died of medical neglect, medical malpractice, The physician who had neglected her for 3 or 4 years and just watched her condition worsen. The little bastard sent her a birthday card a year after she was dead.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
Dad was still pretty mobile back then, and we had to have a long chat about not going down and beating the shit out of an oncologist. Because he looked at me and said, I may be 74 years old, but I think I can still take him.
Well, I'll tell you how much knowledge they have about their patients and how much care they have for them. And basically, they're just, you know, they become countless numbers that are placed on lists that are just carelessly mislaid. And they can bury their mistakes. Unless, say, you try to load somebody with arsenic, they can dig you up and see exactly what you've been doing. I mean, it's really scary. It really is. It's not as you laugh at. And there are some good doctors around, and there are others that are not.
Oh, I'd like to hope there are more good than bad.
I would, too. I especially do, yeah, especially. But, you know, there it is. That's where I've been since October 16th. And like I say, I've learned an awful lot, and I've seen an awful lot. And normally I'm not around a lot of people. No, I'm pretty much keep to myself. But this experience has forced me to be around people, to interact with them, medical staff, nurses, and stuff like that. And some of them have been, you know, a lot of them have been assholes, but a lot of them have been really pleasant. And the experience that I described to you about that young man whom I met at Mapleshire, and I was just paying him a compliment. It wasn't being ugly, dirty, or anything that way. He was just, when I woke up, I said, you know, I must be dreaming. And I was. And, you know, he said, what do you mean? And I told him what I just said. And, you know, I don't think you can pay a 20-year-old a better compliment than that without any thought of anything dirty or whatever. Because I told him, I said, you know, you could be working for Calvin Klein. What the hell are you doing here?
That was very nice of you.
I thought so, too, and it was received in the same vein. It really was. And he started talking about his dog and this, that, and the other, and his parents, everything, his whole life. His name was Josh. He was just a very nice person. And when I would go into the gym room or whatever, he would always just say hello. And I would just, you know, sometimes I'd go in there and just say, got a cigarette? just outlandish stuff. And then they had these bicycles, and I had this other guy who worked with me named Sean. And, you know, you sit there, they said you 30 minutes, you got to pump at that thing. You know it's good for you, but it's hell on wheels. And, you know, my mind just...
Hell on one wheel.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just said, what did I say to Sean? He was... And I used to embarrass the hell out of him. I would just say, let's see. What did I say to that man? He was just getting so frustrated and just turned red as hell. I said something about, like somebody had broken wind, except I didn't use it in a, I used a different way of saying it. I said, I can't remember. Damn, Alzheimer's will be kicking in. But basically, it was, I was just saying that loud. And, you know, people they would just look around and think, this guy's crazy. And I said, you got it. This is one place where I can do it. And I can get away with it because I'm paying them a lot of money to do this sort of thing. And, you know, I just said, we'll hold anything at all. I just said all kinds of crazy shit.
Well, probably, you know, it's probably not easy working in a place like that, so you probably perked them up a little bit.
Well, that's what they said, you know. And at this point, I was going in a wheelchair. And you remember how the Queen Mother used to wave?
Yes.
That's what
you're talking about, the light bulb wave?
Yeah. Yeah, bless her heart. I love that old woman, though. She could be a real bitch, but I loved her. And, you know, she went through a lot of shit in her life. And she sure told the Duke of Windsor and his wife where to stick it. But nonetheless, the old dear, I still miss her in a way. I really do. And she lived at Clarence House. And we talked about this before. And there was one instance in which she was upstairs and called downstairs. And she and all her staff was gay. All of them were, to the man. And she would just say on the phone, well, one of you queens bring this old queen a drink. I'm thirsty. A gin and tonic. Thank you.
What a life.
She had a life. I mean, and that woman, the Queen Mother, she went through some rough times.
Oh, yes.
I mean, she got bombed and, you
know. Lived through the Blitz.
Exactly. And was learning how to shoot and stuff like that because she said, they'll never take me. And I believe her. Because she was of Scottish descent, and Elizabeth Bowes Lyon, that was her name. And George V said about his son, George VI, he said, damn, he'll be lucky to get her as a wife. And he was lucky enough to get her as a wife. And she got George VI through a lot of things, you know, particularly his stammering and stuttering and this, that, and the other, along with that vocal coach, Lyon Lowe. But, I mean, you know, that's one instance when I think the royal family, you know, sort of, It did provide a lot of guidance and things of that nature.
Well, say what you will about the current monarch, and I've said plenty. But
oh yeah,
to be, you know, to be north of 90 and keeping the schedule that she keeps, and what's and getting out there and going and visiting the victims of the bombing, all the way from London to Manchester, that takes a little starch.
It does. I love her hats. I don't know who designs those things for her, but they're just incredible.
I like to think she designs them herself, but, you know, that's just me.
Probably she might do, and who knows what she does, but she's out of that old asshole she's been married to.
I'm pretty sure that Princess Eugenie drops acid and designs hers.
You think so? Could be, but I mean, I think they're wonderful, and those colors and stuff like that, those pastels and things like that.
Well, you were probably out of commission when there was a story a couple of months back that sort of leaked out about the contingency plans for what happens when Elizabeth heads off for the great beyond.
They even made a story on it on PBS.
Well, that whole nation is going to come to a couple of billion-dollar halt.
It's called Charles III. And there's a story on PBS. His son Will makes him abdicate. So instead of Charles III, we're going to have another William. Now, I'm not sure how many Williams there are. I know that there was one earlier back there.
Well, you know, when you think about it, if you like your history to rhyme, and you consider that that young man's age and where we presently are, it is conceivable that if he were King William,
he'd be William the Fifth.
Yeah, but he would be King William in 2066. Exactly 1,000 years from the arrival of another William on the island.
You know, if something happens to Queen Elizabeth and she passes on or cannot perform and decides to give it to Charles, I don't think Charles is really going to want it. I mean, he's been at Highgrove too long, and he didn't, you know, why should he put up with that shit? Give it to his son, Will.
Yeah.
And I think the last William was it William the Fifth who was who preceded Queen Victoria? William the Fourth?
Yeah, I get my monarchs mixed up, but
he was just real dissolute and all this kind of stuff, and built these structures at Brighton on the seashore and stuff like that. I think it was William the Fourth, and maybe I'm wrong, but nonetheless.
Well, I've been lost in the 14th century again for a while, and Edward III is a fascinating character.
Edward III.
Hundred Years' War, Poitiers.
Right.
Schemer. That book by Barbara Tuchman, A Distant Mirror. I recommend it for anybody who just wants to escape the miseries of the 21st century. You will feel immensely better about who you are and where you are and when you are once you're done with that book.
My God, that woman was an incredible writer. She really was. And, you know, speaking of this, and I'll get off here, I know she had one admirer in the White House, and that was for her book, The Guns of August. As a man who loved to read it and who read it with a lot of, he was impacted greatly by her writing, was John F. Kennedy.
John Kennedy, absolutely.
And we're celebrating this weekend his 100th anniversary or his 100th birthday had he lived.
I was thinking, oddly enough, I was thinking about that earlier today, Jim.
And, you know, they had his daughter on the news this morning, and then they had her son. And Bob, I swear to God, her son Jack looks just like Jack Kennedy as a young man. He could never deny his lineage because he was very good-looking, well-spoken, and he reminded me so much of Jack Kennedy when he was young.
Well, I got to thinking earlier today, you know, Kennedy was born, John Kennedy was born in 1917.
Right.
And, of course, we also had the Russian Revolution in 1917.
Yeah,
and on a comparative basis, if you were to just say most important event of 1917, Russian Revolution, birth of John Kennedy in there, entry of the United States into the First World War, who comes out on top of that?
I say John Kennedy did.
In terms of overall impact, though. Look at the number of people who would go on to die as a result of the purges.
Well, I know.
Incident to the Russian Revolution, ultimately,
well,
you know, Stalin.
Yeah, positive. But, yeah, I mean, the negative, good Lord. In 1917, there were, what, two revolutions in Russia, one in February, one in October, where Lenin finally came in and threw Kerensky out. And the only thing Lenin could think about was terror. And, of course, you know, and then you see him sitting back there stroking his cat, and it's just amazing. But I think even he realized that he would have to go back, and that's the reason he instituted the new economic program, which allowed people to to live a fairly normal life, the peasants to have to enrich themselves, because he realized, you know, and that's where the kulaks came from. In 1829, when Stalin came to power, all that went to hell. They collectivized, and it just became a horrible situation, and so many people died. They really did. And but not to get off on that.
It was a tough century.
Yeah, it was. I mean, good Lord, and how it began, you know, it began basically with, well, I mean, look at what happened to the ruling families. You had the Romanovs, you had the Hohenzollerns, the Habsburgs, and, of course, you had the Windsors, or the, we'll call them the Saxe, well, whatever, I'll just say Windsor, because that was, their original name was Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. And the Kaiser used to make fun of them because he'd say, well, are they going to have a new play called The Merry Wives of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha? you know, I never could quite understand because, you know, William had to advocate going to Holland. And I just wonder why they let him live there. You had Karl in the Austro-Hungarian Empire and Zita. I think they wound up somewhere there, too. And, of course, you know what happened to the Romanovs. I mean, three dynasties that just gone. And ironically, right before the whole thing started in 1914, they were all celebrating the length of their tenure rulers.
Yeah, what about, it was 1910 or so, yeah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the Romanovs in 1913, because they were 300 years on the throne. But, you know, it's just amazing. But 1917 was definitely a war. President Kennedy, going to get back to him, was a man whom I dearly loved. Met him when I was just like a junior in high school. And there was just something incredibly wonderful about him and his family. I mean, a lot of people say bad things about the Kennedys. Well, I don't see anything, or I don't know of anybody, you can't say bad things. Yeah, and John Kennedy was such, and the brain he had.
And the brains with he surrounded himself, the Dulles brothers notwithstanding.
Exactly. His motto was, cherchez le capable, look for the capable, and he did. Well, listen, it's been a great conversation with you. I've enjoyed it. I don't know, is there any way I can listen on, or is that sort of...
It's kind of impossible, because this is the only line. I know you tried to listen on the other line last night, but it didn't work out for you. It doesn't work for a lot of people.
It worked. I can hear what the guy was saying.
Well, if you want to listen on that, that's fine.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Take care, Jim.
Thank you. And, meaningful Memorial Day to everybody.
Thank you, Jim. To you as well.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim, who, as you, well, I didn't give any particulars. He really has had a season in hell, and for what he's been through, he sounds great. So we're at the top of the hour, and let me just update on fundraising for the evening. We started out with only $180 to go. And knocked out a chunk of that. We've got, by my reckoning, 115 yet to go to finish the evening. So hopefully we can knock that out in the next 55 minutes or so. We shall see. Because it is about 5 minutes past the hour. Let me see what's going on here. And there's our buddy, the Angry Indian. Let's cross our fingers and hope everything works. Hey, Angry.
Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man.
I've got a nasty echo coming back at me.
Are you serious?
Maybe it settled down. Okay, it appears to have. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know. You were dipping out over here because I'm going through White Rose Society, and there were certain things that were said by either you or Jim, and then, you know, like... cold words.
We've had a buffering nightmare, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. and it's driving me bananas. It's I don't know if you realize it or not, but it's not as bad tonight as it has been in previous.
As it has been, yeah. Okay, so, yeah, Jim, you know, I hope you're feeling better, man, and everything works out for you. But Jim pretty much already tapped where the fuck I was going to go. You know, I mean, I write a lot of essays. I don't necessarily publish them all, but I write down what I think. And those of you, and I'm not trying to plug, but I'm just saying, F is for fascism. You can go out there and get it on my Twitter feed. You can visit the site and check it out and download your PDF of that. I talked about a lot of this. And, you know, when I look at Trump, one of the things I try to do when I look at contemporary politicians to see if there was someone historically within the Anglophone political, you know, history that fits. And one of the people that fits, for a lot of ways, not necessarily because they actually line up politically in terms of their status, because they don't. They don't. You know, I know Trump likes to think he's imagined himself as somehow, arrived from his humble Queens background to marrying all these models and having all these fucking hotels and basically bullying the shit out of everybody since he got the fuck out of military school. And I looked at the Duke of Windsor, and they're just the fuck alike. Do you kind of follow where I'm going with?
Yeah, I do, actually.
You know, because my father, like I told y'all, my father might have been black, but he was a fucking conservative, you know. And he was just like, oh, the Duke of Windsor, it was a goddamn shame. He had to give up the crown so that he could marry Wallis Simpson, you know, who was born in Philadelphia, by the way, so people. But no, you know, she was an American Baltimore family, actually, that ended up in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, actually, because, you know, they fell on hard times. But she was the type of socialite that, well, I got to marry a rich man. And she married one cat who was a naval officer who became an alcoholic and beat the shit out of her. So she left him. She married him at like 19. Then she married whatever the fuck his name, Wallace. And, you know, they had a rather loose relationship. You know, he wanted a younger woman, a socialite, someone of that status. He was trying to make a come up, so they got married. But, you know, they were pretty open. He did what the fuck he did, and she did what the fuck he did. I mean, he was actually flattered, according to the staff of the Duke of Windsor, that, you know, Edward was interested in his wife and was willing to fuck around with her, because anybody that knows anything about the Duke of Windsor knew that the royal family could not control this motherfucker, all right? Yeah, I mean, his brothers were a little more disciplined, unless you're talking about the Duke of Kent, because he was connected to Noel Coward and all types of other shit. But again, what I'm trying to get to is that, you know, my father was very defensive, talking about, well, a man should be allowed to do what the fuck he wants to do. Now, of course, he only knew what the fuck that he knew, which was the official story that was put out there by the royal family and the newspapers, because they were also reporting on what the fuck they were allowed to report on. That, you know, he gave all this shit up. He gave up a fucking kingdom and a goddamn empire for a woman that, you know, just about anybody at the time period said, look, you know, she's not the best looking chick. You know, she's not all this and that, but she knows how to work men. And let's just face facts. If you want to do a fucking, what do they call it, psychohistory, Brother Bob? If you want to do a fucking psychiatric, you know, fucking look at the Duke of Windsor. He was a weak motherfucker. He was a weak son of a bitch. He never had a goddamn woman. All of his brothers were able to, including George, who was probably the one that got dissed the most because he stuttered, because he wasn't out there, wasn't, you know, drinking and trying to fuck everybody around him and all that kind of shit. He was a disciplined man. And it fucked up his health, probably, and shortened his goddamn lifespan. But I'm following up on what Jim was talking about. The goddamn Duke of Windsor was a weak motherfucker. And he allowed women to fucking sway him. And he used people. He used everybody who had to fuck around him.
Who had a taste for fascism. I mean, let's...
Yes.
Yeah.
He was hooked up... That's it. He was hooked up with the fucking fascists in Spain. He was hooked up with the fascists in goddamn Portugal. He was hooked up with the fascists in Belgium. But as Jim was fucking leading to, and cut me goddamn to, good. But, you know, congrats, Jim, because I'm glad that somebody else is worried about this shit as much as I am. That motherfucker said, hey, I'm a fucking Gotha. I'm really German. This is his quote. There's not a drop of my fucking blood that isn't German. Now, people like, especially the Alex Jones goddamn fans, they like to, you know, well, I'm a fucking expert on history because I know this little bit about the royal family. Well, they don't know any goddamn thing. The fucking royal family was fighting the fucking Nazis, or at least trying to. And one of the goddamn problems was they couldn't let the fucking public know that there was this kind of dissent in the fucking royal family. Yeah, you know, the king had changed the goddamn name, you know, to cover up the fact that they were German, like all the other
from Battenberg to Mount Batten.
Mount Batten and shit like that, right? And Allos and whatever the fuck. You know, for political fucking reasons. Because he realized, you know, I'm representing this fucking island nation. But the fucking common person out there on the street who doesn't have a fucking hand or a penny in what the fuck is happening down here and what's really going on in this city and in the fucking real London, said, okay, well, we got to fucking get these people to understand something, that we're on their fucking side. Anybody who's ever read Sherlock Holmes knows what the fuck I'm talking about. The common man out there in the street said, the royal family doesn't give a fuck about me. Maybe the Germans will give me a fucking cut. And this is what the fuck they were worried about. Because Windsor was out there saying, hey, if I can't be king and have my broad, and I'm saying it like that, because Wallace, everybody who fucking knew this, including the woman that fucking got them together by accident, another American, Lady Furness, said, yeah, I asked, you know, fucking Wallace to watch out for my, as she put it, my little man. Because that's how everybody fucking looked at him. And there's only one other fucking historical fucking president that I can think about that. Augustus fucking Caesar. No, sorry, wrong. Julius fucking Caesar. He was known as every man's man and every woman's fucking woman, okay? He was known as an open fucking homosexual. But at the same goddamn time, he was beholden to whatever the fuck was happening in Egypt because they had political fucking ties there. And that particular Cleopatra politically knew how to work his ass. The same thing with Wallace Simpson. Wallace Simpson used to fuck around with the goddamn future son-in-law of fucking Mussolini. She also fucked Ribbentrop. And everybody fucking knows this, including the U.S. goddamn FBI, because Hoover had followed them under Roosevelt's orders the entire fucking time they were in the goddamn Western Hemisphere. And it was just like, well, goddamn, they're selling out England so that this motherfucker can have this particular woman, and that they, you know, he figured that Hitler will fucking make him leader. He's quoted as saying, after the British destroy the Americans, after Germany destroys the Americans, the British will have to accept me as their fucking leader. And it's on record that the fucking Germans told him, we will give you 50 million fucking British pounds and 50,000 goddamn British fucking soldiers to fucking defend you, because we expect that a certain amount of your communists will fucking come against you for this shit. And when I look at Trump, and when I look at the Duke of Windsor, I'm looking at a selfish son of a bitch who went and fucking sold out the entire goddamn country. He just motherfucking said that Germany is evil, evil, and that they will never sell another motherfucking car in the United States. What the fuck?
Yeah, I know. I know.
I had
one of those moments when I first saw the reports of it.
My God, if such a thing exists, he talks about his German DNA making him smarter in the business world. When we know, listening to this son of a bitch and his own fucking accountants, he doesn't even know what the fuck is going on in terms of filling out a goddamn application for any fucking thing. And I still don't believe that he fucking took the exam, his exit exams for the Walton Business School, because that is one of the fucking places that is known that you had to pay somebody to take your fucking exams. I don't believe that he passed that bullshit. I don't believe that he fucking finished any of his fucking exams, even when he left military fucking school. He is an imbecile. He is a bully. He is a fucking nobody. But because he has money, as he put it, I'm not putting words in his mouth. When you're a star, you can grab him by the pussy. And he's wondering why the fucking world is looking at him like he's a fucking idiot. and Wild Papa. I mean, God damn it, Brother Bob. The current Pope almost makes me want to go back to church.
I don't know. You might catch fire going through the door angry.
Well, that's okay.
But
I'll just be one more motherfucking priest that's
as I mentioned earlier, what idiot tries to start a trade war with somebody who has factories in your country that employ thousands of your voters?
MAGA does. I've had my issues with Mr. Obama. Goddamn, he wasn't perfect. He let the cops just wipe us the fuck out. You know, I mean, he hasn't done anything for indigenous people worth a goddamn. I mean, yeah, he let a Puerto Rican activist go. But, I mean, fuck. Okay, that was to sweeten up fucking Puerto Rico because they're about to crash the goddamn colony. Okay, fine. But he didn't crash the fucking shit like this. The British do not want to share intelligence with us any goddamn more. The fucking Israelis are like, fucking intelligence? We're not giving you a goddamn iota of any motherfucking thing. Your goddamn man will sell us the fuck out. Matter of fact, we probably got operatives that are being wiped out right now because of this shit. Yeah, that's right. I'm sitting here as a fucking black Indian in America and saying, fuck, I got nowhere else to fucking go. I got to fucking work with this system to some goddamn degree. All the fuck I do is ask for some fucking respect. But this is what the fuck I'm represented by. And I got to fucking listen to a bunch of neo-fucking-punk-ass Nazis defend a goddamn Montana Republican who body-slammed a reporter for fucking asking him a fucking question.
Well, you mentioned that. Check this out, okay? This is a story from Talking Points Memo.
This is a story from Talking
Points Memo. Oh, God, the echo's back.
Yeah, because somebody's fucking listening.
No. This is something
going... Yeah, Mossad, I know you...
No, this is one of your. This is a setting on your end, brother.
As I said, Mossad, whoever the fuck else is listening, is when certain subjects come up that our motherfucking feed always gets fucked up. Yeah, that's right. Trump is a fucking sellout.
There were reporters in Montana today interviewing voters at the polls. John Forte, voter to me in Bozeman just now after declining an interview. I think reporters have it coming. Kyung La, a reporter for CNN. Montana GOP voter to me just now knowing I work for CNN. That audio made me cheer. She smiled as she walked in to vote for Jen Forte. Montana GOP voter upon learning we're from CNN. You're lucky someone doesn't pop one of you. And apparently, John Forte has a previous history.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He's a white supremacist. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That motherfucker has been given money and speeches and pats on the back and dick strokes and all kinds of bullshit to fucking every white supremacist, anti-immigrant, anti-gay motherfucking group that he can find in his state. Oh, yes. And, of course... We're supposed to ignore this. BuzzFeed, not exactly known as the most liberal journal on the internet, says, oh, by the way, the Republican frontrunner in Montana has an extreme anti-GLBT past. Since entering the spotlight, Gianforte has avoided questions about social issues, but he has personally lobbied against an LGBT rights bill, and tax documents show his foundation has given more than $1.1 million to leading organizations that oppose gay rights.
He's also a creationist.
He's a creationist, and he's also hooked up to fucking Russia. He has substantial holdings in Russian firms. This is reported by BusinessInsider.com. Not a liberal motherfucking newspaper.
But the guy who broke that story angry wasn't Business Insider. The guy who broke the Russian connection in his portfolio was the guy he tried to strangle last night. Happened about a month ago.
Yep. Yeah.
And in April, I tell you what, I'm gonna just to make this work, I'm going to pot you down just angry so that I won't echo back at myself, but and then I'll pot you back up. We can make this go. It was in April when he was doing an appearance, and he pointed at a reporter, and he said, "We have someone right here. It seems like there's more of us than there is of him. I don't have a simple solution for you. I'll say that doing town hall meetings and getting out and visiting with people is very important." So last night was not a one-off angry.
No, this is the current, you know. And it was always there. It's always been the soft underbelly of not just the United States, but of most countries. It's just we've gotten to the fucking point here that we have somebody who is actually holding political office that says, you can do what the fuck you want to do, provided you're doing it in my favor. Provided you're doing it to, you know, where it's going to get my particular agenda someplace. And the bottom fucking line is, he has become president. He got what the fuck he wanted. He really didn't think he was going to win any goddamn way. You know, this is another Putney Swope moment, right?
Yep.
He didn't think he was going to get it anyway. And a lot of people fucking slept. He didn't win the popular vote, but the Electoral College gave it to him. You know, W didn't win the popular vote, but the Electoral College gave it to him. They were both fucking Republicans, and they both damaged the fucking economy and both put us on a war footing in which we're still fucking stuck on. But everybody wants to blame Obama. Well, he continued to do this. Understood. I'm not fucking saying that, oh, well, he should have just pulled the fuck out. You know, it's really easy, and I'm saying this as somebody who is supposed to be on the left, but I'm not a goddamn liberal. I'm on the left. That's not the same fucking thing.
You're not an idiot.
I'm reluctant to say, no, you know, even then, as an indigenous person, you know, that left-right shit is colonialist as far as we're fucking concerned. But once you start a military goddamn conflict, you create power vacuums. You create fucking social instability that you can't just the fuck pull out. You know, those people who have actually served. I'm talking about people who have fucking served in office of fucking ranks. And by the way, I probably should even bring this up, and I'm not going to mention this gentleman's name. But, you know, I lost another fucking friend. I don't know what it is, Brother Bob, as I get older. I keep losing, you know, people I know. But this particular gentleman served in the Navy. He served in the Navy band during World War II. Why did he serve in the Navy band during World War II? Because he was a pacifist and he was an anti-racist. And he was just like, you know, I don't want to go out there and fight because I don't want to hurt anybody. And I don't think the soldiers on the other side even know me enough to want to hurt me. But I still need to serve my country. He was a Republican, Brother Bob, and a member of the Universalist Church. He and his wife, his entire life. He was 96. And I'm trying not to cry right now, but he was one of my good friends. And, you know, one of the reasons why I'm arguing like this is because of him. You know, there are people out here who are on the fucking left that are pacifists. You know, I'm not a pacifist, but who are pacifists, have all kinds of ideas, who love this motherfucking country. Who love this motherfucking country. Like I said, my goddamn father, as much as we fucking argue, he was a black man, total fucking conservative, this, that, and the other. He loved this motherfucking country. But when he was pushed in his back was against the wall, he was just like, God damn it, everything I fucking have done amounted to nothing. And then I look at somebody like Trump, and I look at the black people who support Trump, like fucking Omarosa, or that punk-ass Sheriff goddamn Clark, who obviously can't even write his own fucking thesis. He has to plagiarize the entire fucking thing, and then all they can do is defend him, talking about we're being punk for fucking calling out his goddamn plagiarism. Or that we're cowards because we're talking about this reporter being body slammed. Even though in that goddamn state, if he pulled out a fucking gun and shot that guy, he would have been legally within his fucking rights. What kind of country have we fucking developed? Because we've been passive? Because we've allowed people to do this shit? You know, just over the fucking past weekend, I had to sit through another fucking social session where another white guy was telling me, well, hey, you know, nothing's happening to you racially in Portland. I don't see the Klan lynching you in Portland, so I don't know why you always have to be on an anti-racist
And basically, I'm just tired of fucking hearing it. Same thing when I hear men talk about sexism against women. They're just like, oh, well, you're not a woman, so why the fuck do you care? You're not Chinese. Why the fuck do you care I call somebody a spit? And that could be any goddamn racial group. You know, we've allowed this shit to get completely fucking out of control while repeating over and over again, oh, this is America. We're the land of the free. We're totally democratic. We totally love everybody. Everything is about everybody else. You know, we're only doing warfare and shit so we can bring democracy and freedom around the world. In the mean fucking time, we know full goddamn well what the fuck we're living in. This is a long, bad motherfucking date between the fucking public and the goddamn politics here. And because the fucking public is too fucking coward to admit that we don't know how the fuck we got here, they're continuing to go totally off the fucking rails because nobody wants to fucking come out and say it. We lost motherfucking control. That we let somebody like Trump come the fuck in because we allow him to destroy every fucking thing because we had a nigga as president and we don't want to fucking deal with that anymore. We want to bring it back to a fucking whiteness that works for me. And I'm sorry I went on with that long-winded thing, but until we start discussing this shit, we'll never fucking fix anything. And by the way, the person that said that to me was an ex-fucking Marine, 100% pure motherfucking American from Maryland, who totally believes in this fucking country. And no, I don't believe he's a bigot, but when it comes to dealing with fucking racism, he's just as much as a fucking coward as anybody else out here. And I don't give a fuck about his goddamn service.
So, I mean, by way of an example of what you're talking about, this kind of thing happens. I mean, whether it's a candidate punching out a reporter or something as simple, and we've seen the incidents in all kinds of different locations, Starbucks, restaurants, what have you. Something as simple as trying to go to the goddamn store becomes a social experiment. It becomes a dangerous adventure. Take, for instance, a little walk by a woman named Eva Hicks down the antacid aisle at a Walmart that I presume is somewhere near Pittsburgh, because Eva Hicks is a Steelers fan if you look at her Facebook page. And she looked at a white lady and said, "Excuse me," as she tried to reach over for, I don't know, a bottle of Tums or Rolaids or something. It's something. But the white lady in question, who was in her way, took umbrage at Eva Hicks trying to reach for her meds. And this happened.
Run your mouth. Go back to Mexico.
Go back to Mexico. Oh, really? Now, wait a minute. This is the highfalutin, really expensive line. It's not supposed to buffer like this. Stand by just a second. Angry, I've got I've got you potted down just so I won't echo back at myself. Let's try this again.
Run your mouth. Go back to Mexico.
Go back to Mexico. Huh. And suddenly the media could not be played. How about that? Well, just so you'll know.
Run your mouth. Go back to Mexico.
How about that? It crashes every time. It crashes. I said go back to Mexico. Maybe it's not Pittsburgh. That's kind of southern sounding, isn't it? So she sits there, this white woman does, giving Hail Columbia to this woman who has started to video her, which inflamed her, and she's running her mouth, and another woman walks up and says, "Stop being ignorant." To which the white woman replies, "A nigger's calling me ignorant?" This is Trump's America. Bless his heart, even Squint said the fish rots from the head this morning. He's desperately trying to hide from his role in putting Trump in the White House. But this is Trump's America. We had ugliness, nastiness for 8 years under Barack Obama, but it got cranked up to 11 with the Trump campaign. Sorry about the pot down, Angry.
Oh, no, it's fine.
I trust you've seen that video.
Oh, no, actually, I heard the audio. I really didn't want to see the video just because I knew it was going to be disturbing, and I just didn't want to look at it for my own self-care. But I've heard it, and I'm going to stay here flat out. You know, I try not to talk about myself because I consider myself a journalist, all right? You know, independent press I've worked in for a few decades now. I just, you know, thought about this recently, started to reevaluate my career and realized that, you know, yeah, I'm broke. And I've been doing activism since my late teens. And, you know, I haven't received a fucking dime, but I saw a lot. And, you know, I really fucking did a lot. And I've written some articles that have had some weight. But, you know, the point is that, you know, you try to be objective, but it's really difficult to be objective when these sorts of things have happened to you. You know, I try not to bring up the fact that I've endured that kind of fucking racism myself, you know, in different parts of the country. And no matter how the fuck I'm dead, when you see Don Lemon, when you see Lester Holt, you see me. Somebody, you know, like me can fucking go into a place and people are just, you know, moving verses away from you and sliding away from you. And when you make a statement, even if, you know, if it's somewhat cold and they say, "Wow, you're really smart," even though the three white guys in which you're talking that were in the same fucking circle said exact same shit and nobody said that they were smart. You know, his thing is, well, if it's not happening to you, then, you know, I don't see the problem. And my thing with him is, well, you have enough white privilege, you don't have to worry. It was the women in my life who said, "Look, motherfucker, hold up. Think about this for a motherfucking minute. What the fuck is wrong? You know, hold up." You know, and it's like, and being open to listening. And I think, you know, again, I have my issues with the old man. A good goddamn man. And he's like, you know, listen to women because we need them. He was indigenous. He was Gullah. He's like, yo, shut the fuck up sometimes and open your fucking ears and listen to what's going on around you. And when you listen to these sons of bitches, you hear the cowardice. This is where Jim was going when he was talking about the royal fucking family and where I'm going. When you look at the Duke of Windsor, he was a fucking punk. When you look at Hitler, I'm not saying that Hitler was a coward per se. I'm saying that Hitler had his own crazy fucking idea of glory. You know, when he was a fucking corporal, he used to run in the bullets and all this bullshit and say that Providence, i.e. God, you know, the Nazi God, saved him. You know, all this time. Type of bullshit. He didn't live in fucking reality. You know, you look at Trump, at Bush, at fucking McConnell, any of these motherfucking Republicans, Rand Paul, they all fucking stand around like they're making a historical statement for the fucking ages. You know, the old Francis ex fucking Bushman and shit delivering the fucking Gettysburg goddamn spread, you know, fucking address, you know, on some, you know, Eastern, you know, New England goddamn stage, some fucking where that's being recorded for fucking posterity. All of these fucking crazy fascist fuckers, I don't care what country, what culture, what motherfucking ethnic group, what fucking era. They're all fucking delusional fucking people who are crazy. And we should not be fucking afraid of them. You know, here's Trump talking about, well, we stand with the people of Manchester, but he didn't say a goddamn thing about the terrorist attack in Quebec. I suppose because the victims were Muslim. You know, or any of the other fucking terrorist attacks.
Some of them,
yeah, they were just getting, they were just reaping what they sowed. Angry.
Oh, you mean the cops that were killed recently?
No, the Muslims in Quebec.
No, the Muslims in Quebec. But how about the American policemen that were killed? You know, they're not going home to their families any fucking more. They're not gonna fuck. You know, they were killed by white supremacists. So I guess that's okay, right? That's okay. Evidently, to the fucking alt-right and the army.
Yeah,
and
God only knows what kind of nightmare radiation bomb those neo-Nazis in Tampa were planning before their recent Muslim convert buddy blew them away.
Blew them away. Okay, right? You know, so here we're talking about, this is where the fuck I'm going, Brother Bob. Thank you so goddamn much. We're looking at people who are unstable. If I can't be a big man in one motherfucking arena, I'll slip over to the fucking other side. If I can't be king, I'm gonna fucking destroy the monarchy. So if I can't get anywhere as a white supremacist, then I'll become a fucking Muslim. Somebody's gonna give me some fucking action. Somebody's gonna make me feel like a fucking big man. Somebody's gonna make me feel important. Because when it really comes down to it, I'm a fucking nobody. And this is why I don't fear these motherfuckers. I've challenged the fucking Klan face to fucking face. That's why it's hard for me to take these motherfuckers seriously. Oh, well, you know, you can't really, you know, fight racism like that. Have you ever dealt with a Klansman face to face? Well, I wouldn't put myself in that situation. I didn't have that choice. I didn't have that fucking choice. And like I've told you on this show before, I've had family killed by the fucking Klan. You know, and it took me a long fucking time. But I've gotten to the fucking point I realized I'm not going to be afraid of somebody that's so motherfucking really afraid of me that they got to step to that kind of goddamn action. Because you're really fucking scared of me. My daddy used to say this shit. He was a gullah man from goddamn South Carolina, Monk's motherfucking corner. He said it. If you got to put a hood on to go after a motherfucker, you're a punk. You're a fucking punk. You're a fucking punk. So I don't fear these bastards. I know what the fuck they can do. I'm worried about what the fuck they could do to me and my goddamn family, but I'm not fucking afraid of them. I'm not afraid of anybody that needs to bring a fucking field grade goddamn weapon to pick up a fucking softie in a fucking civilian fucking environment. You're a fucking coward. And that's all Trump represents, is the fucking punkiness. What America has become wasn't always like this. At one goddamn time, let's go back in history 100 fucking years, the Republican Party used to be about something. They used to be the fucking radical liberals. They used to support women's rights. They used to support Native American rights. They used to support fucking anti-slavery and the fucking rights of black people. But they want to continue to put this shit on Democrats because they got nothing the fuck else. They got to pull out these old moldy motherfucking canards because they got nothing the fuck else. They have no fucking platform other than give the rich their fucking money because I don't know what else to do. I'm just an 85. Tell me what the fuck to do while I accuse everybody else of being a fucking robot. Because it's ego, Brother Bob. It's ego. They don't give a fuck. They want to feel better than somebody else. When you look at Alex Jones, you're looking at a weak son of a bitch who's yelling all the goddamn time. Yeah, I'm raising my fucking voice, but I'm raising my voice so I can be fucking heard. Alex Jones is a fucking nutcase. He's a dangerous, sick son of a bitch. And he's also got fucking press credentials now. So does that guy.
And angry, he has a constituency.
Yeah, yeah, which makes him dangerous. And here you and I are on the fucking internet on our respective shows. And like I said, I got my differences with Mike Malloy, but fucking Mike Malloy's out here. He's been kicked around on every goddamn station that he's ever fucking been on, just about every motherfucking outlet. And yeah, I know he puts a lot of it to talking about Israel, but the point is, he's a white man talking about racism. You are a white man talking about racism. You know, Maddow brings it up every now and again, but she's get a little backup because Israel can do whatever, and she just, you know, very softly glides over it. And that's another thing, now that we're talking about it, since, you know, we're going no, don't have that much fucking time. What the fuck is it with the Hasbara / Zionist / pro-Israel lobby when it comes to Trump? He's backed by neo-Nazis and the fucking Klan. But they're still talking about Obama, who gave them just about everything they wanted except, you know, exact shit to fucking do genocide.
Yeah, the only thing he didn't do was give tacit approval to just saying, screw it, run over everybody and build yourself settlements wherever you want.
I mean, they did it to Pappy Bush, too. He cut their money at one point, remember, for the settlements. He's like, this isn't what we agreed to. But then his evangelical fucking son, their do-well son, came in and said, well, fuck it, you know. You know, that's the land of Jesus. He walked there. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, have you taken the time? It's sickening. But if you ever taken the time to visit any of these neo-Nazi websites, they're drastically turning on Trump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I did. Especially after the Israel trip, when and the Saudi trip, and then the Israel trip, when the entire filthy alt-right corner white nationalist bullshit fucking Klansman neo-Nazi world decided that Trump had become, in their words, a cuck.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised. Again, just like I went from being a neo-Nazi to an Islamist extremist to the point where I'm going to go to the job of my two fucking roommates and blast them and then hold the other motherfucker hostage and shit, you know. But hey, you know, Dylan Roof, John Hauser, Gerard and Amanda Miller, Sean DeFord, JT Reddy, Eric Frein. I mean, that's just off the top of my head. The Hutari, you know, Anders Breivik was in and out of the United States, in and out of Britain. You know, hey, at what point do we say the real fucking problem is what the fuck the United States inadvertently got started? Because I know it's hard to tell a lot of these pro-Russian lefties out here that everything isn't necessarily a fucking plot, that these fuckers make a lot of goddamn mistakes that are inadvertent. Al-Qaeda was an accident. They didn't do that shit on purpose. The same thing with funding these motherfucking Syrians, that, you know, the extremist Syrians, religious extremists.
Oh, and by the way, you mentioned Syrians. We've got more problems.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
Because as Sandra pointed out to me earlier, we just killed 35 more civilians in the eastern part of the country.
With SEALs, no less.
No, airstrikes.
Oh, you mean with airstrikes? But you heard about the SEAL contacts, too. You know, they basically reacted when they were on two operations, including the one where he blamed the Navy for the operative that was killed. I mean, look, I'm no fucking warmonger, man, but, you know, my goddamn family's Navy. And, you know, for the fucking blame the commanders for sending them out on some shit that you just signed off over fucking chocolate cake, when all the fuck you ever did was sit in goddamn military fucking school. Fuck you, man.
Well, you know, remember, do you remember when Trump said, we're going to kill their wives, we're going to kill their children?
Oh, yeah.
Well, according to an observer group, 26 relatives of IS fighters, women and children, including Syrians and Moroccans, were killed in the airstrike. The other 9 are Syrian civilians and include 5 children.
And, of course, that's not going to piss anybody off, you know.
No,
you know, because they're not really people. They're not really human beings. And, yeah, you know, mistakes happen and all that bullshit, collateral damage. You know, I understand that. But, you know, just like with the collateral murder thing, you know, it's one thing to soldiers to make a fucking mistake. I'm not saying that shit was okay and then they should have fucking let it drop. No. But when people came to fucking help them and they blasted them and fucking shot those kids up, I mean, where, you know, how do you make an excuse for that? You got people sitting in prison who were doing 25 to fucking life because they made a fucking mistake. And then you got deliberate shit out here. And it is like, well, hey, everybody has a bad day. As long as you're a Republican, it's a bad day. You know, I mean, he didn't know. Somebody told me this yesterday. Trump didn't know what he was doing. He was dancing around with that sword with those guys, that war dance. He didn't know what he was doing. He was just trying to be friendly. I said, yeah, that's pretty funny because, you know, going back to the Duke of Windsor, they said that he was just being friendly when he visited Hitler with Wallace Simpson And see, he was sick highly and clicking his heels and shit all through the fucking trip. He was just being friendly. Obama goes over and eats the food. Well, that means he's a traitor. He shakes hands and tries to make some kind of fucking reasonable peace with the Iranians. You know, he's a traitor.
He's on an apology tour. This.
He's on an apology tour. But I watched this motherfucker curtsy, just like you did. That was a bitch curtsy. I'm sorry.
I've seen some damnable things, but that, as my buddy from Southern West Virginia says, that beat cat's fucking. It did. And while we're at it, angry, lest it slide under the radar, I really don't want to miss out on pointing out that there is not a goddamn bit of doubt anymore among anybody with a working brain that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Turd is a liar. And not just a little bitty one, a great big one. When he got called out by Senator Elizabeth Warren and Mitch McConnell muzzled her for pointing out that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third is a liar, it was bad enough. But now it turns out that he, like other members of the Trump regime, just ignored federal laws requiring disclosure of meetings with foreign agents. In this case, Sergei Kislyak. And Sessions, who claimed that, well, I didn't realize I was supposed to disclose that meeting because that was when I was a senator and not a nominee. Well, he doesn't have that excuse now with regard to the form that he left blank and arguably broke the law over. And Senator Warren is vindicated. And from a personal standpoint, since Joe Manchin is my senior senator from my state, I want to know how Baloney Joe feels about his full-throated defense of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Turd, now that we know that Beauregard is a goddamn liar.
Yeah, well, he'll just ignore any question like that, like the rest of them. I mean, you know, they've been defending Gianforte, so they're defending Sessions the same way. You know, I mean, they're defending the plagiarism of the thesis from Sherrod Clark for Homeland Security Deputy Secretary or whatever. So, you know, look, let's really get the fucking brass tacks. When you're dealing with a fucking liar, when you're dealing with, you know, with somebody, you know that they're going to fucking fall back and, you know, blame you for everything that they're doing. They're going to accuse you of and such and so on. So, you know, there's no way to have a reasonable fucking conversation with someone like that. Now, what could, of course, you know, turn a lot of this over is the press. But is the press willing to do this? Because that it would be an indictment on them for allowing, you know, this shit to go on as far as it's fucking gone anyway. And whether it's Sessions, whether it's Manafort, whether it's, I mean, just Trump directly. I mean, the FBI is looking at Kushner too, right?
That's confirmed now. That was confirmed today. He is the person of interest inside the Trump regime.
With all of this. I mean, even as Sherrod Clark has dealt with the Russians, there is not one person that he has named except for Betsy DeVos. She's the only person so far that I haven't heard of any Russian collusion. But just about every fucking buddy else has had some kind of connection to them. And I'm going to say something else because, you know, now that you brought this up, because I wasn't going to talk about this. But, you know, you and I both have been criticizing whatever the fuck the left is supposed to be here in North America, at least in the lower 48, because Canada has more of their shit together for the most part. I'm not talking about Trudeau, I'm talking about the left. But, you know, there's been a lot of fucking confusion here as to what the fuck we're actually supposed to do, especially when you look at a thing like Sessions. I mean, how many more fucking people have to come out that have had connections to the Russians? Now, one of the things that Brennan said is true. Now, I know we can talk about how fucked up Brennan this and blah, 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 blah. But what he said was true. Now, I've been running the Aboriginal Press News Service since 1999 in some way, shape, or form. You know, I'm putting up shit, you know, before the blogs, on various listservs, what have you. I've been on this grind on the internet for a while because it's an open platform. I didn't have to deal with editors necessarily. I can just put it up. I'm saying right now, he made a motherfucking statement that said that people can be working for the Russians and not really know that they're working for the Russians. You follow me here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I've seen plenty of examples that fall within that category.
In that category. I mean, I don't want to name a couple of these podcasts, but I know a bunch of them have been doing this. And I know how they fell into that. How do I know, Brother Bob? Because Russia Today used to send me fucking leads. Or at least it was a mail server purporting to be Russia Today. I also used to get shit supposedly from Press TV. And, you know, every now and again. But then I started asking myself, why would they send a nobody motherfucker like me that puts out a blog for indigenous people, not just North American, but indigenous people around the world, the entire fourth world? Why would they send me shit? Because they realize that I'm trying to get indigenous people to understand where we are politically. But the point is, I didn't fucking fall for it. You know, they were putting out job leads. Oh, we're looking for editors in the United States. And then you see politicians like George Galloway in the UK, who I have no beef with. But he's got a show on RT, or at least he used to have a couple of shows on RT. You got Abby Martin. You got a few people. But the thing about it is, RT is a state-sponsored fucking news service. It's not like Al Jazeera.
It absolutely is.
Which is independently run in Qatar, who gets slammed by the government of Qatar, who have had their offices attacked by various fucking governments and shit, and accidental, oh, we didn't know you had a new service over there. Oh, we're sorry that we hit that place. Oops, we killed some of your reporters. Oh, wow, sorry. You know, can we send you some coffee and donuts tomorrow and shit to make up for? You know, no, it's not like that. It's not like that. So fucking I realized after a while that what they do is they try to play on fucking, you know, lefty, quasi-lefty fucking reporters and bloggers and what have you and podcasters and try to get them to put their motherfucking material out to basically present Russia's argument, right, on certain subjects. And when you try to tell some of these know-it-all motherfucking, I'm an expert lefty at fucking 22, I don't give a fuck about how many fucking things you've done and all that bullshit, you know, saying to me, they don't realize this. And I'm like, what the fuck makes you think that Russia loves the black man? What the fuck makes you think Russia respects his indigenous fucking people? What the fuck makes you think Russia gives a damn about Jews? They were forced to because of fucking communism. Trotsky was told by Lenin, do not let fucking Stalin, who should be on your side, being he's a fucking Georgian, right? Don't let that motherfucking anti-Semitic son of a bitch get the head of the party, because you will be doomed, and the rest of your fucking people, he's going to go after them. And that's exactly what the fuck happened. Jews didn't get any respite until Stalin fucking died or was murdered, depending on who the fuck you ask. You know, and it's like, we got to understand these fucking political things. There is no 100 fucking monolithic, perfection in any of this. Yes, I supported Bernie fucking Sanders, and I still do. Is he a perfect fucking socialist? Absolutely goddamn not. He's voted for shit that I find kind of reprehensible. But then at the same time, he's supposed to represent the people in his motherfucking district. So, you know, what the fuck? But we got to be clear about what the hell is going on. You know, I just got into a fucking disagreement with somebody this afternoon who thought that Macron was a socialist.
Oh, my God. What? Well, yeah. Hey, Angry, we got to get out of here, brother.
Okay.
We're at the end of the program.
Yeah, I'm glad to be able to speak to you. You know, I'm glad you're feeling a little better. I'm glad Jim is doing better. I'm glad everybody is, you know, chipping in and doing what they can. But please, I know it's fucking difficult. You hear me say this every time I sign out. But Bob really needs your help to keep this fucking show on the air. Because when you really take into account what the hell is being put out here in the airwaves, there is not reality. There are not the voices of real people. What Jim was saying today should have been heard on C-SPAN. It was an American voice speaking reasonably
So if you want that kind of radio, please do what you can, especially my UK and American, I'm sorry, and Australian listeners who pipe into this show. Please go on PayPal, do whatever you can do. Keep this show on the air. Peace.
Thanks, Angry. Our buddy, the Angry Indian. And yeah, we got $115 to go to finish off for this evening, so we don't have to have any Friday on the Front Porch miracles. Hopefully that will remedy maybe in the next hour or so, and probably a couple of licks overnight. So I will thank you for joining in on this Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday. By the way, I had an update from Kelly, the woman who said all of this.
Run your mouth. Go back to
Listen,
Mexico.
Listen, I said, excuse me.
Go back, wherever you're from.
I said, excuse me. Don't be rude.
You're the one that's rude.
No, I said,
yes,
excuse me. I'm trying to buy something.
You're in America.
So?
You're in America.
So? So what?
That's none of your business. Stay out of it.
I don't need to stay out of it.
I said, excuse me.
For everybody to hear. Stop being ignorant.
A nigger's calling me ignorant.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
To Mexico and all that stuff.
Oh, yes, my goodness. Absolutely. You are very rude.
No, you're the one that's rude.
I said, excuse me, because I'm trying to grab my medicine.
You told me. You know what you told me, and I.
Yes, I said, if you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Just go on.
What?
Tells her to go on and get out of the aisle. Well, that's Bentonville, Arkansas, the very beating heart of Walmart itself. And later on, there's a happy ending of sorts, because the young yellow vest management type comes in and tells the cranky white, tells the woman with the economic anxiety, because it's obvious she has economic anxiety, that she's the one being the problem. What does she do? She looks at the young man and says, "What's your name?" Because by God, she's going to march her white privileged ass up to the management desk, and she's going to get her some justice. Bentonville, Arkansas. You just go on. You go on. No. And, how many generations is it going to take before this kind of stupid dies out? Will it? I don't know. Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you, the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, everybody.